Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at www.sfarmmarketing.com.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded the 16th day of April, 2010. The planter's role and the market goes higher. Is it a weather market, inflation, an economic recovery? We'll ask these and many more questions today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated. He's in Kansas City, Missouri. Our panelists in studio today include Mike Zuzolo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Lafayette, Indiana, Ellen Dearden from AgriView in Morton, Illinois, and Bridget Chenoweth of AgriVisor LLC out of Bloomington, Illinois.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
And by listeners like you. This is Illinois Public Media, the program Commodity Week, produced by the University of Illinois, with your financial aid. We'd like to ask for that now. If this is a program that you just found and you enjoy, and it helps make a difference in your farming operation, please do give us a call with your financial pledge of support at 217-244-9455. That's 217-244-9455. Or if you're listening online at willpledge.org, willpledge.org, we'd like you to start at the $120 level, but 40, 80, 120, 240, 360, 640, 750, or 1,000 is magnificent. All that really matters is that you give. 217-244-9455. Please pledge your support for the agricultural programming called Commodity Week. We accept Visa, MasterCard, Discover, and American Express. The number to call right now, 217-244-9455. Again, our panelists in studio include Bridget Chenoweth, Ellen Dearden, and Mike Zuzolo. Mike Zuzolo, let's start with this question. How odd is it this week for you to be sitting behind the desk to have the planters rolling in the field and the markets going higher all at the same time?
And wheat leading. Even odder yet, wheat leading. Wheat with 950 million bushels of ending stocks. I think the market finally caught up with the outside markets, Todd, basically. I think that's my basic assumption at this point is that why would livestock and energies and metals and equities go sharply higher, make 18 to 20-month new highs, and the grains just languish and sit there if investors see the stocks and the commodities as similar asset classes? And I think China's import data was pretty astounding for March, up 66%, and near record volume usage of copper and imports of crude oil.
Bridget?
I agree with what Mike says. You know, fundamentally, there certainly wasn't a whole lot of reasons to see those commodities trade the way they did this week. I saw the strength that we saw in the wheat market. You know, there are a record amount of short positions in that wheat market. I think we're going to see some bouts of short covering. But longer term, I really don't think this is going to be sustained too long.
And Ellen Dearden.
We've seen rallies in this time before, but we haven't seen rallies where both the corn and the beans are going up at the same time in the spring as corn planting begins.
When you look at it fundamentally, the last USDA report, Ellen, said we're going to have more acres of everything. Do you think this can be sustained?
The type of questions that I've had this week has been that we're going to see lots more acres of corn than what we expected to plant 3 weeks ago just because the weather's good. And the fellas that I talked to in the South, and the soft red winter wheat acres are saying that they're going to have to rip up some of that soft red acreage, and that probably will go into beans. So we may end up with quite a few more acres.
Let me follow up. The questions, you said you're getting questions that suggest, or comments, I suppose, that there will be more corn acres. Are they backing it up and saying, I'm putting more corn acres in the ground?
I've had questions, should I plant all corn? So that says to me that, yeah, they'll plant more corn acres.
Have you been hearing the same from your...
I have. I think that the farmers, you know, the weather conditions are ideal, and with this warm weather, I think the farmers are just going to stick with the corn.
Well, if they do, they have a May corn price this week with a high of 365, a low on the week. This is the weekly trade at 345 and a quarter, with the settlement price at $3.64. The Friday to Friday change was 18 and a quarter cents to the gain for the May corn. December contract at 394 and a quarter, settlement price up 15 and a half cents. When should they price out those new acres of corn?
I would start probably as early as next week, Todd. I think what would be very beneficial to the grain trade is that we go down and correct short-term overbought conditions, test these breakout levels from this past week of around that 950, 945 level in Nove beans, around that 375 level in Dease corn, 383 area for some people. Those levels, if they hold, that could become the new support. And if they do not hold, I think that's where you're going to have to start stepping it up.
I absolutely think that farmers need to take advantage of the strength that we're seeing right now. Some of the cycle counts that we look at, the 4-week low for corn is due to bottom in the month of June. That's going to be a significant bottom. So I think, you know, any rallies we get to the upside, producers really need to take advantage of that and get some of that new crop priced.
Can I make it three in a row? Who want to price
up? Yeah, I want to price additional corn. I'm really ready to start at this 395 to 405 level, especially for guys that are way behind on sales or are adding to their corn acres.
Have they been looking? Have they been in the field, but have they gotten into their corn bin? It's been awful warm, and I'm wondering whether there's problems left to be put in the old crop corn at this point.
I think there's going to be some problems once those farmers open those bins. I think right now they're, you know, preoccupied with the field work, and I think once they get through that, I think the month in June we're going to see a lot of that old crop come to the market, and I think that's maybe when we see some of those problems arise.
Would they be better off, in your opinion, making the sale of old crop corn if it's in the bin and not sold yet?
Yes, absolutely. I think they need to start moving that as well.
Wheat market, May futures, a 491 and a quarter top, bottom at 63 and a half, settlement price up 24 and three quarters at $4.90 and a half, July wheat at 502 and a half, up 23 and a quarter. Why were they thinking that they needed to rip up their wheat acres in southern Illinois?
Just the poor stands, southern Illinois, southern Indiana, just poor stands, didn't weather through the winter. And I don't know how widespread that is, but I certainly got several calls this week about it. And I think that I'm not hearing the same situation in the hard red winter wheat acres, but the soft red, yeah.
And so we have a problem apparently in the soft red, and there's just not much of it left. Would you be wanting to hang on to that? It's leaning to the top side. I still think they have a problem with convergence with wheat, so what do you do with that?
Yeah, I agree. I think the basis really needs to start coming up here. If we've got really low acres and really serious cash problems, you know, developing here, I don't think we can rule out the idea of a May freeze either. I think that's something else that has to be looked at when it comes to the wheat. So I'm a put buyer when it comes to wheat, Todd. I like the $5 to $5.40 level in July futures and getting puts underneath me, and then just leave the cash alone and see if that convergence doesn't come about later on.
We'll ask Drew Lerner a bit later in the program about a May freeze for wheat and whether that's possible very deep into the United States. And we'll see what he has to say about it. Speaking of a couple of different things, here's one that's different for this program because you don't hear me say this often. But we would like you to dial a number right now. It's 217-244-9455. Do pledge your financial support to Commodity Week. We are in need of your help, and it's quick, simple, and easy. Visa, MasterCard, Discover, and American Express. If you listen online, willpledge.org. More on that later. Let's take up the soybeans. May contract a 989 and three quarters top this week. A bottom at 52 and three quarters, settlement price up 33 cents at 985 and a quarter. November beans 965 and a half, up 29 cents. This comes during a time when the South American crop ought to be just rolling out of their ports and onto the ships headed for the export market. How did it happen?
Well, there, the flow of beans to the export market in South America has just been pretty darn laggard, and growers in that area, too, are saying the prices are just not sufficient for us to let loose of anything, even though that their harvest is well beyond the 80% point and about 55% has already been marketed. I think growers are going to hold, just kind of hang tough. When we saw July bean futures at the end of the week up there close to the $10 area, we may start seeing some Brazilian interest from the Brazilians in selling. Certainly, we're not seeing that interest from U.S. growers.
Does it surprise you that the Brazilian soybean producer is such a hanger-on with their beans this time around?
A little bit, I guess. You know, I guess they just cash prices aren't looking all that attractive to them right now, so they're just going to hold on to it and see what they can get out of this market.
But this cash price doesn't look terribly bad to the U.S. farmer, I would think.
No, I mean, right now, we're looking at making some. You know, if you have any old crop beans and or new crop sales that need to be done, these price levels are attractive to get that moved out.
Mike, you got an idea what's the difference between the hemispheres?
No, I haven't looked this past week. I do think, though, that, you know, going back to that report, what bothered everybody, I think, in that report was how can you keep the ending stocks low? And I think the trade was really gunning after a 200 million plus ending stocks number and really big 78.5 to 79.5 million acre 2010 beans. And I wonder, Todd, if, you know, they're talking about how China is trying to encourage their producers to plant more corn. I wonder if this rally is not just the leftover from those two reports, and we're trying to encourage producers to plant more beans. And I wonder if those acreage aren't something to, you know, look at here down the road.
I think you're right. I also want to throw out that the Brazilian bean basis is really horrible. And so I think that's played into the slowness of the Brazilian grower to let loose the beans.
I'm contemplating a couple of these things. So we've got the Brazilians with a really tough basis. You're suggesting that Chinese farmers might be encouraged to plant more acreage.
Yeah, what I'm suggesting is maybe the trade isn't looking at Brazil and Argentina right now in that supply. Maybe they're looking at encouraging us up here to get our bean acres in, and then they come back around and say, okay, we've got the U.S. acres in. Now we've got this big South American supply. Let's take it down again. I think much is the case. I think beans have the most downside fundamentally, but when speculators come in, beans oftentimes have the most upside. So, but they have the most premium in them fundamentally.
So an acreage war at this time of the at this
I
time.
I don't want to go that far. I mean, that sounds like we're back in 2006, 2007. All I'm saying is that there was a lot of people in Chicago after the acreage report that didn't see the 79 million, 78.5 million bean acres, and they got a little bit shaken up because we're still down at 190 in carryover, and some people in Chicago say it's really 170. It's not 190. Those beans aren't out there.
Well, yeah, but that number, Ellen, 190, isn't all that small compared to what we've done. We've done 105, 115, 130. Those are really small carryouts. Do you believe him?
Well, when you start looking at carryout as a function of what demand is, yeah, we're still pretty darn small. So I think 190 isn't a comfort level like it might have been 5 years ago or 10 years ago or something along that line. And just because everybody sees these the Chinese coming in and just these huge buys.
You know, the other thing, and we probably ought to take this into perspective, is that on the crop insurance, they can make money at least on beans at this point, but they're still below that on corn.
Yes, they are. So, I mean, that may, you know, sway some producers, you know, to plant those beans. But once again, I think it's really going to come down to the weather conditions. So, you know, weather holds out, I think the farmers are just going to keep rolling with the corn.
Well, I've come to a point where I've got all four of you willing to make sales on corn at this point. Are all three of you willing to make sales on beans or not?
We're making sales here in this 960 range on November beans, and I hope we can get some more sales off in the 1030 range.
Yeah, I would absolutely be looking at bean sales at this time as well. The cycles for beans at 16 to 18 week cycle, it has a low as well in June, so that could be a drag on the markets going into the summer months.
more aggressive on bean sales, actually, Todd. I like being 70% half cash sales, half puts, and I'm only at 25 to 30 on corn right now, with the next target right around where Ellen was talking about, around that 405, 410 area.
So I have to ask one more question, because we've had a lot of folks that have seemed as if they've turned to the bull side, or at least convinced that the marketplace is turning to a friendly side. Are any of you convinced of that at all?
No, I'm not. I think you have to give it respect. We've broken the 200-day moving average in Nov beans for the first time since January 14th. You got to be respectful of that.
We had an upside breakout after a 13-week sideways. I think you have to respect that too.
I think you take advantage of it, but longer term, I really don't think that there's going to be a whole lot of upside left in the market.
More from Commodity Week when we return. We'll talk with Drew Lerner, World Weather Incorporated, about the agricultural weather forecast. If you haven't dialed this number yet, 217-244-9455, please do so. That's 217-244-9455. Or if you're listening online, pledge your financial support at willpledge.org. That's willpledge.org. We like to start at the $100 level, the $120 level. Wherever you want to start, it's great with us at 217-244-9455. You're listening to Commodity Week, and it is Pledge Drive Week here at WILL in Urbana-Champaign. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for WILL in studio this afternoon to tell us all about, a couple of things that we have happening and reasons you should support Commodity Week. Dave, thanks for dropping by for Commodity Week.
As we're recording this on Friday afternoon, Todd, we're at 188 calls in support of agricultural programming. The all-time record for phone calls is 193, and that number was set last fall. So we're within 5 phone calls of the all-time contribution in support of agriculture programming. 217-244-9455 is the number to call. We accept Visa, MasterCard, Discover, and American Express card. We have an overall goal in this fund drive of 1,000 phone calls. We're working our way to that number. We hope to reach that number by noon today. And if we do that, we will not have to pitch on Sunday. 217-244-9455 is the number to call.
Again, the number to call is 217-244-9455. Thanks to Dave Dickey. He's the Director of Agricultural Programming here at Illinois Public Media and is urging you to call in with your support. We'd like to have a record drive for agriculture, and you can help out by pledging your financial support. Do it online if you listen to us there at willpledge.org. It's quick, it's simple, and it's easy. Visa, MasterCard, Discover, and American Express. Of course, you can always write us a check. Just do it now. 217-244-9455. This edition of Commodity Week was recorded on the 16th of April, 2010. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. In studio with us today, Bridget Chenoweth of AgriVisor LLC out of Bloomington, Illinois, Ellen Dearden of AgriView in Morton, Illinois, and Mike Zuzula of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. On the phone line with us is Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. Thanks for being with us, Drew.
Thanks for the invitation.
Well, you've had a busy week in all kinds of things. It started out with some ideas that we might look like 1988 and ended up with a volcano. What did you find out all week long?
Well, there are similarities to 1988, but stop short right there. It's not going to be in 1988. We are in an atmosphere right now that is absolutely unable to generate the kind of heat that we had in the 80s. The atmosphere is cool. It's also moist, even though we're running a little low on precipitation right now. The only thing that's probably most similar to 1988 is what's going on in the Gulf of Mexico. The sea surface temperatures down there are very cool relative to normal. And that tends to reduce the amount of water vapor that gets into the atmosphere and therefore reduces the amount of moisture that can get entrained by some of these storm systems as they move across the eastern part of the country. That's one of the main reasons why we're seeing less rain in the eastern half of the country right now. The other factor that's similar to 1988 is the fact that we went from an El Nino event into a La Nina, and there's speculation that we're going to do the same thing this year. I personally don't believe we're going to make it to a La Nina quickly enough to have influence on the summer season. If we take that out and we look at the general flow pattern that should prevail this summer, we should come to the conclusion that a 1988-style drought is not a possibility for this year. Dryness in the southeast, though, is something we'll be dealing with off and on throughout the growing season.
I had a question on this demise of the El Nino. Is that really going down rapidly, or will we continue to have El Nino-like conditions all the way into the early summer?
We will have El Nino's footprint around for quite a little while, at least into June. The actual event will be rapidly diminishing as we get into May, and it really will probably not completely dissipate until sometime in June, and then, yes, there will be some lingering effects that will go on into the middle of the summer. Now, there are a number of computer programs out there that are running and suggest that the demise will occur very quickly, and we're noticing already a lot of cool water building up underneath the surface of the central equatorial Pacific Ocean. So it does look like the transition will occur fairly quickly. But I just don't think that we're going to be able to have the atmosphere make the proper adjustments from an El Nino to a La Nina quickly enough to generate the kind of dryness that some people are speculating about.
Drew, when I was driving over Friday afternoon, I had an Illinois client call and say, I've got my corn done. Should I plant my beans? And I made the remark about a potential for May freeze. What's your outlook on that?
Well, this atmosphere is cool. There's a lot of coolness around, and even though the U.S. has seen some very warm weather in the past 2 weeks, we're probably not going to see this prevail for a great deal of time. It's cool in China, it's cool in Russia, it's cool in Europe, and it's just a matter of time for that to spread back into this hemisphere. So what's going to happen is that we will see more frequent bouts of coolness, and I don't want to go so far as to say, yes, we've got a frost and a freeze threat in May, but I certainly can't sit here today and tell you that we don't have any risk whatsoever. I think that we do have a chance for that. The pattern that we're going into will probably support warmer biased conditions for a little while longer, but we will be trending cooler in the last week of April and on into early May.
How often do patterns like this just simply switch?
Well, actually, they do occur in history. They have occurred periodically. I don't know that it's a high frequency, but a lot of times when we have a cool, wet spring, we will flip the other direction and end up with a warmer, drier finish to the summer. That is something that does happen in nature, and that's why we have an average weather pattern for the year. We tend to counterbalance the trends. So with that in mind, we also want to keep into account the longer-term trends that are playing out here, and one of those is the sunspot cycle that we're in right now. Coming out of the large solar minimum that we've been in the last 2 years, it dictates a cooler bias for the summer. And for that reason, I can't get too excited that we're going to turn around and heat up and be hot all the way through the summer. I don't think that'll be the case. And the correlation with the sunspot minimum and this cool summer that follows is pretty strong. So I don't want to give the implication that we will finish hot. We will finish dry. I think we'll have a drier than usual harvest coming up. And some areas in the southeastern part of the country is going to be fighting drought through a large part of the summer. But we are going to have an active tropical cyclone season in the Atlantic, and that's likely to bring at least opportunities for relief.
I guess my question, I wasn't thinking quite that long term. I was thinking on the short term, how often do these patterns just flip in a month period as opposed to a couple, 2 or 3 month period?
Oh, quite often, actually, because usually the kinds of patterns that generate those sharp bouts of heat are usually a byproduct of the jet stream having a lot of kinks in it. In other words, there's a lot of large-scale troughs and ridges of high pressure that are in the atmosphere, and they work their way around the hemisphere, and as they do that, we go from one extreme to the other. So quite often when we're well above average, we will go well below normal at some point in the not-too-distant future.
Tell us about the ash that's currently in Europe from the Iceland volcano.
Yeah, unfortunately, the media has done a great job covering this volcano, but we have to be really careful not to assume that this is the big one that's really going to change world patterns. This volcano is smaller than that of Mount Redoubt in Alaska a year ago. The eruption has been certainly impressive, and the videos are great. But in reality, the amount of ash that's being dispersed into the atmosphere right now is not even close to what Redoubt did a year ago, and therefore it's even less compared to Mount Pinatubo in 1991. The odds of us seeing a global weather pattern change because of this particular volcano is very, very low. Now, if for some reason it continues to erupt over several days with ash going very high into the atmosphere, then I would change my opinion. But we aren't putting enough ash up into the higher atmosphere right now to generate enough of a change in the particulate matter and the amount of cooling that would come with that. It's just not going to be great enough right now. Now, please keep in mind, we are going to have a cool summer, hemispherically speaking, just because of the solar minimum we're coming out of. So it's going to be real easy for somebody to stand up and say, aha, you know, the volcano caused this cool summer. And I think it's really important that we keep it straight, that we're going to be cool anyway. So we'll just kind of have to see how the volcano plays out over the next few weeks. It could still have an influence, but right now I'm a bit, I don't think that we're really going to see a major change, let's put it that way.
Drew, this is Bridget Chenneth, and I was wondering how you saw the weather conditions playing out in China this season.
You know, China is in a very cool weather pattern right now, actually, and that is creating delays in the start of their season in the north part of the country. This cool weather-biased pattern will likely last all the way through May, and therefore the precipitation in the north is probably going to be somewhat on the low side as well. And up to this point in time, there's been an abundance of moisture in northeastern parts of China, in fact, far more than what we were expecting with the patterns being what they are. So they're going to come into the start of the season with favorable moisture, but I think that this drier atmosphere that we're going to see in May is going to allow the heat to build up a little bit quicker in some areas there, and so we'll start drying down. We'll have to watch the northeast part of China's soybean and corn country for some kind of dryness. And, you know, we still have that drought left over from last summer in Inner Mongolia, and there is potential that it will resurge back across some of the northeast there, parts of Heilongjiang and Jilin and Liaoning and even Hebei. Those provinces are on the fringe of that drought, and they could very well see some expansion of dryness later in the year.
Drew, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for the invitation.
Mm-hmm. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City, joins us here on Commodity Week. If you haven't dialed the number 217-244-9455 with your pledge of financial support yet, please do so. Mike Zuzulo, a final word from you today.
Good week next week to get started on some catch-up hedges on the soybeans. Todd, we'll be waiting on the corn to see how the wheat fares.
Mike Zuzulo is with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Lafayette, Indiana. Bridget Chenoweth is with AgriVisor in Bloomington, Illinois.
Producer's going to be putting some long hours these next couple of weeks. I just want to tell all those farmers to be safe out there.
And Ellen Dearden is with AgriView out of Morton, Illinois.
We don't want to leave this kind of money on the table, particularly on the bean side of things.
And that is this edition of Commodity Week. Something to keep in mind, as you already know, please do dial that number, 217-244-9455. Pledge your financial support to Illinois Public Media and Agricultural Programming.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.